Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about Episode 1 of the Wikipedia article on Albert Einstein, the famous scientist. It's 70 pages, and it's really worthwhile digging deeply into this person. You sort of get drip-fed bits of information as you do your science course. Then you get into working with some of his equations. Yeah, and there are various Einstein equations, but there's very serious Einstein equations for working out the absorption, emission, and laser emission. They call that laser ones. And then there's a few critical steps where he's involved, and you study them. And at various points in time, you come across them, study this and that. And then, as a scientist, you read some of his papers. And having read other papers, you recognize how they are different from your standard papers, in that they're rationalist thought. There's a whole lot of competing ideas, and they're argued through the competing ideas. So it's they are very elegant papers, but their understanding in them is that they can operate on ideas, accepting that they might be true, and then working out what is the most likely answer. So the inexperienced people reading through the paper will be teaching what is might be true, but has now been proved incorrect. But they will read a little bit from Einstein's papers and pick up the wrong information. So it's something that you really do need a lot of background involved in. As scientists, you need a background to understand it. You need to understand that people misunderstand them. And you also have to understand that he's very much a cartoon, a cultural icon. As such, he's been appropriated and has become part of the language with which to describe him. So everyone knows about Einstein, and everything makes assumptions and knows various things about him, but that means that set of assumptions, when you actually use him, describe him, you're using the cultural language that we've established of Einstein to describe him. And that's not necessarily so. So in terms of actual manipulation of equations, yes, there's some things, but in terms of the actual rigorous, deep mathematical proofs and the other things, he left those people for people he called clever high hands, people who think it's highly intelligent to work out the details. He was a big picture person, so all that sort of understanding and how he works is really up for grabs, because there's trying to judge things. So it's we do this all the time. Listen to people, but about laws and stuff like that, there can be a question. But the moment they wear a uniform, we've been conditioned to think these various sorts of things. We will obey directly an order of someone in uniform, our reaction to it there. So similarly, Einstein is wearing an Einstein uniform, so we have a conditioned reaction to him. So let me start reading this, and I'll read it. That's only a 3-minute introduction, so that's mercifully short. I'll read it here. Albert Einstein is born from the 14th of March, 1879, to the 18th of April, 1955. So I might live 100 years to 100. I'd be lucky to live to 2055 myself. Was a German-born theoretical physicist who developed the theory of relativity, one of the two pillars of modern physics, alongside quantum mechanics. So the theory of relativity and quantum mechanics, you're both important things. Theory of relativity is just simply the formal moving away from a medieval idea of angel time, of instantaneous absolute time, to more localized time. And quantum mechanics he really didn't get into. It happened just after him. It's a sort of second wave revolution. But a lot of people, they're exhausted by listening to Einstein. They stop there. And so quantum physics is a revolution which hasn't really happened so far. His work is also known for its influence on philosophy of science. He's best known for the to the general public for his mass energy equivalence formula, E equals mc squared. Interesting that the actual the c in notation is unit one, so that drops away. And E equals is really, it's not equal to, it's equivalent to. So there's actually a three bar across it, which has been dubbed the world's most famous equation. That's truly, I would say so. He's received the Nobel Prize in 1921 for his services to theoretical physics, and especially for his discovery of the law of the photoelectric effect. This is where you hit metal with a UV photon, and if the UV photon has sufficient energy, it will eject an electron with an energy equal to its kinetic energy equal, its movement energy equal to that, less the binding energy to remove the electron from the surface. Now, what's, I suppose, misunderstood here is that he was using a lot of concepts which turned out to be incorrect. So it's the ability to sort of hoard and move up to a problem, move around with it, and reason through to most likely rational answer means that you have a rational answer, but necessarily the path that you've gone up there is not necessarily correct. So one of the things is that you might get the yield of 1 in a million photons produces an electron off the surface. Electron will have a quantum mechanical distribution of angles it goes from, so it doesn't move vertically off the surface. So there's a whole heap of things, and his ideas, his picture of an electron as a particle is correct for the time, I think 1905, but that's been overturned. Now, there's been, because of this complexity, people think Einstein, using Einstein as a linguistic tool, a thinking tool, to get into. Now, I think I've written a paper on the iconoclasm. So an icon is a cultural asset, so people can talk in terms of an icon. So you have a church, a crucifix, these things, and so these actually mean things. They're a language in architecture, a language in cultural language, and so it at one point aids in communication, simple communication, without it sort of removes the complexity of the number of steps. You replace a broad bunch of concepts with a single concept, makes it easy to communicate. It's like a shorthand, that's what language is. However, it has the ability to evolve, and in this case, Einstein's understanding of the photoelectric effect is a very primitive understanding and has flaws in the way that it is described. And if you understand the physics afterwards, you say, oh, well, it's a very primitive way. There's the way things that he says, he attributes to other people, and he... it's a complex way in which he's able to go from low information to a correct conclusion. So he explains how he's done the step, but it is not the same as a rigorous situation where everything is proven along the way. So he gets to the end conclusion. And then it means that people of later generations who are inexperienced with that step can see the easier to conceptualize step of, say, an individual photon as a particle going in and hitting an electron out the field. And in a sense that it does do that, but the electrons distributed, the light is distributed, it moves in a phase space, momentum phase space, up to a higher momentum. Very interesting to understand, but this is why I'm reading this. A pivotal step in the development of quantum theory, that's right. So it was a step to develop quantum theory. Yeah, that was a critical thing. It's got the Einstein thing equals h times the frequency. And then, as we go further, we have other things that the momentum of frequency, the momentum of a photon is the wavelength in meters divided by h. So that's quite an interesting thing. But now all those things are he didn't derive why a photon had that. He just looked at the likelihood of these. So it's a big leap forward. A leap it's got some sort of trace, but the trace is not informed by the future discoveries based on that leap. That's as best I can say it. Now, again, people cannot see the problem with Newtonian mechanics because they see Newton as a revolutionary, which indeed sort of he was. He was a revolutionary using maths to apply to problems, but he was using maths. It's not a major step forward from the medieval thinking. So it's yeah. So let's read this next sentence. Near the beginning of his career, Einstein thought that Newtonian mechanics was no longer enough to reconcile the laws of classical mechanics with the laws of electromagnetic field. And again, this I think is understood. So the electromagnetic field were a set of differential equations, multiple differential equations, which contained within it these assumptions, which weren't necessarily clear, but it had the speed of light. Speed of light can be calculated from an electric circuit, believe you me, where you look at the I can't even pronounce it, E naught and mu naught, the magnetic conductance of space, and the permitticity of space. You subtract those, and you get a numerical value from just a circuit what the speed of light is. And indeed, it's an electromagnetic field. But if you re-look at this theory which is developed, it contains that electric field changes to magnetic field as you gain speed. And in fact, this is what happens. You put a current in a wire, the length contraction in the wire, if you move into the framework of the wire, the electrons, the wire is contracted and achieves an electric field. And so though you see a magnetic field, it's in an electric field. It's an electric field in the frame of the actual wire, because that's something to go. So although it seems a great leap forward, it was really just a unfolding, unpacking conclusion from what had been done before, going through. So you've got the electromagnetic field. However, a permanent magnet, there are no currents. There's no long-term currents happening there. If it was, it would heat up and dissipate energy. A permanent magnet, the actual special relativity is stuck with inside the quantum mechanics, and quantum mechanics really they are separate fields, but not really. In applying special relativity to quantum mechanics, you get spin, and you get this next set of equations. So you do get a view of it. Now, this is the major problem, is that if you are talking to a teacher and they have only ever learnt Newton in terms of the language of Newton, you can't say there's other things to it. He has this understanding of this background. They'll just say, well, only idiots read into biographies. I suppose I should read. This is a brilliant biography, a podcast of Newton. where it's a classic academic Newton as seen through different lenses. And indeed, I think there's probably a fourth lens. So Newton as a cultural icon, Newton as a scientist, Newton as some other, a mystic. But I think Newton as a brand is another important thing. You can definitely see by the time Voltaire came to visit Newton's sister, and Newton's sister was very much in developing the Newton brand. It was a very protected idea in Britain, the Newton brand, and very, very discussed openly. And so Newton and the apple is very much an invention of Newton's sister and Voltaire. And so Voltaire told it. And so the apple thing had no story at the time of Newton. It actually came afterwards. And the idea of branding philosophy and branding things to move forward is very much in Voltaire and Newton. It was just developing it. And now we're at a stage of hopefully being able to have a mature post-brand thinking. So really Einstein is a brand. And we are not fighting against the brand, saying there's an alternative brand. We're just saying, look, there's brand thinking, and really brand thinking is a convenient shortcut. Unfortunately, if you don't want to use brand thinking, you have to work out how to do it yourself. So it's sort of like an iPhone. People who go on iPhones get addicted to the brand. There are other people who don't and start to build their own phones and things like that, or build their own systems. So you've got the Linux operating system versus Microsoft system as an example. So the advantage of Microsoft, it's universal, everyone knows it, and it's got currency. It's the idea of a cultural term, like Einstein. It's got currency, but it means that if you want to move beyond the limitations of the brand, you've got to tread carefully. You can imagine people get really upset if you criticize their brands. Okay. This led him, Einstein, to develop his special theory of relativity during his time at the Swiss Patent Office in Bern, 1902 to 1909. So his Annus Miraculus is 1905. So he's a patent clerk, his third year, so he's going for promotions, and he's written special relativity. What is it? I'm sure it's a capillary effect and the photoelectric effect. Oh, not the capillary effect, but not from the capillary effect. It's the Brownian motion. He fixed that in the middle of it. However, he realized that the principle of relativity could be extended to gravitational field, and he published a paper on general relativity in 1916 with his theory of gravitation. Okay. So this is a highly productive person, and the important thing here is the real message here is you don't need an institution to be around you to be productive. You do need a culture to be productive, but you don't need an institution. And one of the things that institutions who market stuff really sell this thing that you have to be part of this institution or we don't want to speak to you. It's a bit like institutions being in a food court and you're trying to sell seeds to grow things yourself. And they will just not be socially helpful. So there's sort of all these barriers here and of how things work. And so they'll try and put these scientists behind themselves and hide them in institutions. And if you're outside that, they'll create a food court sort of cultural vacuum. So imagine you're trying to have a culture, and it's got a food court of these. I don't know if I've described myself properly. So the modern institution will have something that they will recognize scientists within the institution, but outside it, they can't do anything. But Einstein was a patent clerk during this critical stage going through here. Now, also, the theory of gravitation is that was no theory of gravitation before Einstein. Newton was a mystic, and he said, "I feign no hypothesis. If I feign no hypothesis, I ain't got a theory." That's the end of the story. He was using it as a mystic way where people became involved in his cult. That is, I drop a ball, I can see how fast that drops. It confirms that what is happening is that is not sensing the gravitational field and responding. It is confirming Newton. And we teach it nowadays. We teach people the religion of Newton and the experiments designed not in the modern sense of experience, but they're religious events in which you go through the sacrament of belief. That's my view. Okay, so look, I'm very strong. I'm not arguing against anyone. It's just that's the only thing left standing after looking into it. He continued to deal with the problems of statistical mechanics and quantum theory, which led to his explanations of particle theory and the motion of molecules. Now, I think that's incorrect as far as I'm concerned, because I think he did Brown in Motion back in 1905, but we'll see. He also investigated the thermal properties of light, which laid the foundation to the photon theory of light. Okay, this is all in this period. Okay, that's reasonable. In 1917, the year after, he applied the general theory of relativity to model the structure of the universe, which he made his famous flaw of taking the religious belief that the universe always existed. Now, this is got a complex religious foundation from Jewish religion, but also Leibniz, going back to Aristotle, who has the famous chicken and egg thing, that this is what came first, the chicken or the egg, what preceded things. That belief led Einstein to use his methodology of rationalism to rationally make a false bet and set his gravitational constant in the Einstein equation of the universe to zero, where it's a small positive number. Okay, let's listen to this. Einstein lived in Switzerland between 1895 and 1914. So 1914 is the start of World War I. And I'm just going to see when he was born. So when did he move to Switzerland? He was born in 79. That's one. Was 16 when he went to Switzerland. 80. Yeah, he was 16 when he went to Switzerland, and he spent nigh on 20 years except for 1 year in Prague, during which time he renounced his German citizenship in 1896, and then received his academic diploma from the Swiss Federal Polytechnic School, later the Eagle and Schloss Technische Hochschule, ETH, in Zurich in 1976. So he's 21. After being stateless for more than 5 years, he acquired Swiss citizenship in 1901, which he kept for the rest of his life. So for some reason, he renounced his German citizenship. Now, you have to really understand that Germany was, he's Jewish, Germany's a young place, and he was from Swabia, and a Swabian are considered like the, you have to understand, in the German eyes, Swabians were fools. So we might say in Australia, previously, it's sort of disappeared, we'd say that Tasmanians are not the brightest people. In Canada, it would be Newfoundies. In England, it would be the Irish. You know, there's always someone in an island sufficiently far away for which you can generate prejudice. And the Swabian. So there's all these tensions here, but why he renounces citizenship, German citizenship, it's very interesting. So he became Swiss. So, I don't know whether he later became American. I don't know whether you become American, you have to renounce your other things. Oh, so, which he kept for the rest of his life. In 1905, he was awarded his PhD at the University of Zurich. So, that's the time. So, and after that, he was, so his PhD thesis was basically the year he produced his most work. I must admit, I do, his 1905 papers are easy reads. They're not too complex. By the University of Zurich. In the same year, he published three, but here we go. In the renowned Annus Mirabilis Miracle Year, which brought him to the notice of the academic world at the age of 26. So hopefully we'll go on with those four things. It's Brownian motion, photoelectric effect, and special relativity. All came in that same year. Einstein taught theoretical physics at Zurich between 1912 and 14 before he left for Berlin, where he was elected to the Prussian Academy of Sciences. So this is, you know, Germany is doing a lot of big things. So I don't know how he went into it. In 1933, while Einstein was visiting the United States, Adolf Hitler came to power. Now, it is interesting, I have this other sort of insight. There was Nazism and science. Nazism had to really, couldn't ignore science, they had to really embrace science. Because there was Jewish science there, so it really, the Jewish, I don't know, it's a complicated story, but it's interesting that how this view of science meant that they, the Germans built these very effective, big, massive tanks, but only a few of them, and they're all bespoke. It's a really complicated thing. It's a really complicated interaction between science and Jewishism and this type of stuff. Because of his Jewish background, Einstein did not return to Germany. He settled in the United States and became an American citizen in 1940, which you'd want to be. But the other thing is that America was expanding and offering these great things, and they had all the money. On the eve of World War II, he endorsed a letter to President Franklin D. Roosevelt, alerting him to the potential development of an extremely powerful bomb of a new type, thus recommending the US begin a similar research. Well, if you actually read it, it's a much more complicated, nuanced letter. So he actually said that you will have to get, he basically used the system that he used to solve crack problems, to crack the nuclear problem. He said, look, follow all these three ways of making an atomic bomb. I've forgotten what the plutonium bomb, the uranium bomb, but also the different separation techniques. And he just basically told them about project management. It's a really interesting letter to read. If you have studied project management, you can actually see this person is educating this country about project management and describing how things are going ahead of time. And I must admit, I've had this where I've been trying to explain the technology before I've fully researched it, and it's become complex. I've sort of understand this. And recommend this eventually led to the Manhattan Project. So the Manhattan Project is a massive, multi-tiered project of parallel things running with competing technologies, which will are solution-oriented. It's not objective-oriented, it's solution-oriented. Einstein supported the Allies, but he generally denounced the idea of using nuclear fission as a weapon. He signed the Russell-Einstein Manifesto with British philosopher Bertrand Russell, which I'll have to do, which highlighted the danger of nuclear weapons. He was affiliated with the Institute of Advanced Studies in Princeton, New Jersey, until his death, 1955. And so I know lots of Aussies who have visited that Advanced Institute and is doing fusion research. Einstein published more than 300 scientific papers and more than 150 non-scientific works. Now, of course, 300 nowadays is nothing. You'd have to be producing, now in academia, you'd have to be producing 5-10 papers a year. And so it would take nothing a year. You know, that's your, it would be standard stuff. His intellectual achievements and originality. I see Einstein as original, but I also see society as profoundly unoriginal. Have made the word Einstein synonymous with genius. This is what I'm trying to actually say, that you can't study him because he's actually merged into the language of it. So when I talk about Einstein, we think, oh, genius. We think of this social reaction to him, which the Americans did. Eugene Wigner wrote of Einstein in comparison to his contemporaries that Einstein's understanding was deeper than Joseph von Neumann's. His mind was both more penetrating and more original than von Neumann's, and that is a very remarkable statement. And I must admit, von Neumann's a pretty amazing character, and you've got to really understand it, that it's not just, oh, he's smart, it's nothing to do with it. You've got to really understand what is the impact of human history in terms of smart people before were smart and they produced little armies or they did certain things. Being smart nowadays with the internet and computers and everyone benefiting from smartness. So what's sort of changed is that when he's been smart, we have had nuclear reactors because of it. The impact is pretty amazing. Whereas, I don't know, people are addicted to it. Let's say if you look at Christ, it took hundreds of years before really it took up. Okay, now there's the contents, and which I'm not going to go through, and this is a huge number of contents here. And the contents goes to several pages, so we're in for a lot of study. Now, this is going to be very difficult to explain it to you, because a lot of the nuances are lost. I'm just looking through this article really quickly. A lot of the nuances, as far as German universities appeal from the part that he was actually treated, it wouldn't take much. Like, if you're from a rich Prussian place and you're a bit slow, people would take a different reaction. For if you're a bit slow from a country place, people would assume a village idiot. It's just those nuances of painting. So you have to look at any individual through the artistry of the palette of the time, and pick things up. And it's only these things that Einstein himself used, had some of that energy of I suppose German sort of light-hearted, humorous contempt of other people. So that, and you also have to realise that he's from 1879. This is a long way in the past. So he is not going to have the modern sensibility, a lot of the modern women's lib. There's a whole lot of things, like black people couldn't vote, women couldn't vote. There was all these complexities. Women weren't allowed in universities. So this society is really complicated. Okay, early life and education. Einstein was born in Ulm in the kingdom of Württemberg in German Empire on the 14th of March, 1879. His parents, that really doesn't tell you about what that kingdom was like and what Ulm was like. His parents were Hermann Einstein, a salesman and engineer, and Pauline Kosch. In 1880, the family moved to Munich, where Einstein's father and his uncle Jacob founded Elektrotechnik Fabrik der Einstein AG, a company that manufactured electrical equipment based on direct current. Well, that's an interesting thing. So, basically, but everyone was doing it. The Einsteins were not observant. Were not observant Ashkenazi Jews. Ashkenazi Jews. And Albert Einstein attended a Catholic elementary school in Munich from the age of five for 3 years. At age of eight, he was transferred to the Leopold Gymnasium, now known as the Albert Einstein Gymnasium. There you go. Now, you've got to understand that gymnasiums came from sort of Greek schools, and they don't translate into the modern public schooling system, as far as I know. Where he received advanced primary and secondary school education until he left the German Empire 7 years later. In 1894, Hermann and Jacob's company lost a bid to supply the city of Munich with electrical lighting because they lacked the capital to convert their equipment from DC to the standard, more efficient AC standard. Well, there you go. Isn't that incredible? So that the Einstein, the Edison stuff, actually moved Einstein out of success and pushed him underwater, so he'd emerge somewhere else. Isn't that incredible, the AC/DC? This loss forced the sale of the Munich factory. In search of business, the Einstein family moved to Italy, first to Milan. That's really interesting because the AC electricity has got the complex numbers in it, which is interesting to me. First to Milan for a few months later, then to Pavia. When his family moved to Pavia, Einstein was 15, stayed in Munich to finish his studies at the Leopold Gymnasium. His father intended him to pursue electrical engineering, but Einstein clashed with the authority and resented the school's regiment and teaching methods. I'm trying to understand where gymnasium came from, but gymnasium was basically sort of a Spartan from that military zone. It's sort of it has left, but it's sort of vanished. But it's also come into the military ideas of schools, sort of people uniforms, discipline. It's a mad world. He later wrote that the spirit of learning, creative thought, was lost in strict rote learning. At December, and this is true here, I could see this here in Australia. At the end of December 1894, he travelled to Italy to join his family in Pavia, convincing the school to let him go by using a doctor's note. During his time in Italy, he wrote a short essay with the title On the Investigation of the State of Ether in a Magnetic Field. But there you go. So that's at school, it's ether. Einstein always excelled at maths and physics from a young age, reaching a mathematical level years ahead of his peer. The 12-year-old Einstein taught himself algebra and Euclidean geometry over a single summer. And so I also have done, well, not that I'm in that league, but I've taught myself quantum mechanics. I taught myself quantum mechanics over summer, but not sophisticated. I've sort of read a few books on it. Einstein also inevitably discovered his own original proof of the Pythagorean theorem at the age of 12. a family tutor, Max Tomlins, says that after he'd given the 12-year-old the whole book, the geometry textbook, in a short time, Einstein had worked through the whole book, thereupon devoted himself to higher mathematics. Soon, the flight of his mathematical genius was so high I could not follow. His passion for geometry and algebra led the 12-year-old to become more convinced that nature could be understood by mathematical structure. Einstein started teaching himself calculus at the age of 12, and 14 years old, he said he had mastered integral and differential calculus. So I've also been very fortunate, and also very sad, in that I haven't been able to teach my kids calculus, but, I suppose it's different. My dad taught me, helped me learn calculus and stuff like that. And so I learned it, but without the formalism. Age of 13, Einstein was introduced to Kant's Critique of Pure Reason. Isn't that interesting? Because I have read Kant. I can't remember. I do remember he was on the Baltic Sea and a Christian, and he was anti-Newtonian. Yeah, here's, so this is interesting. So DC and Newton. Kant was anti-Newton. Kant was concerned that Newton was not enough. So that's interesting. Kant became his favourite philosopher, his tutor stating, at the time, he was still a child, only 13 years old, yet Kant's work, incomprehensible to ordinary mortals, seemed clear to him. So that's interesting. And this is the entire thing. Kant was a rationalist, not an experimentalist, and so was Einstein. Isn't that beautiful? And I get there. Now, unfortunately, after my big head stuff, I can't absorb it as much. I might go back and read Kant again. So Immanuel Kant, and I've done a podcast series on him, and we're 41 minutes in. I'll read to as much as we go. In 1895, at the age of 16, Einstein took entrance examiners to the Swiss Federal Polytechnic in Zurich. Later, the Eilschloss Technische Hochschule failed to reach the required standard in the general part of the examination, but obtained exceptional grades in physics and maths. On the advice of the principal of the Polytechnic, he attended the Agravian Cantonal School Gymnasium at Aar in Switzerland, and in 1895 and 1896 to complete his secondary schooling. While lodging with a family of Professor Jos Wilter, he fell in love with Wilter's daughter, Marie. Albert's sister, Maya, later married Winter's son, Paul. Oh. In January 1896, with his father's approval, Einstein renounced his citizen in the German King of Württemberg to avoid military service. Okay, so that's why he renounced it. So he just didn't want to do German service. In September 1897, you've got to also understand what gymnasiums were. The gymnasiums were paramilitary schools. In September 18th, so you'd have it sort of like the US Military Academy would be a bit, what I'd say. In September 1896, he passed the Swiss Matura with mostly good grades, including a top grade of 6 in physics and mathematical subjects on a scale of 1 to 6. At 17, he enrolled in a fourth year mathematics and physics teaching diploma program at Zurich Polytechnic. Marie Wittler, who was a year older, moved to Augsburg, Switzerland for a teaching post. Oh, isn't that sweet? So she came. Einstein Fichtworth, a 20-year-old Serbian woman, Malik, was also enrolled at the Polytechnic that year. She was the only woman among 6 students in mathematics and physics section in the teaching diploma course. She was going to teach, become a teacher. Einstein was going to be a teacher. Over the next few years, Einstein and Malik's friendship developed into a romance, and they read books together on extracurricular physics, which Einstein was taking an increasing interest. Wasn't that sweet? So I just trying to... it's hard to say, like, it's really interesting in terms of my brain's been a bit fried, but it is interesting to have once understood that stuff encyclopedically, and then you do, if you read Kant, you read Einstein a different way, I would have to say so. In 1900, Einstein passed the exam of maths and physics and was awarded the Federal Polytechnic Teaching Diploma. Here, there have been claims that Malik collaborated with Einstein in his 1905 papers, known as the Annus Mirabilis papers, but historians of physics who have studied the issue find no evidence that she made any substantive contribution. And, I don't know what she would do. An early correspondence between Einstein and Merrick was discovered and published in 1987, which revealed that the couple had a daughter, Lizera, born in 1902 in Novi Sad, where Merrick was staying with her parents. Where is Novi Sad? Merrick returned to Switzerland without her child, whose real name and fate is unknown. The contents of Einstein's letter in September 1903 suggest the girl was either given up for adoption or died of scarlet fever in infancy. Gee, poor thing. Einstein and Malik were married in 1903. In May 1905, their son, Hans Albert Einstein, was born in Bern, Switzerland. Their son, Edward, was born in Zurich in July 1910. The couple moved to Berlin in April 14, but Marek returned to Zurich with their sons after learning that Einstein's chief romantic attraction was his first and second cousin, Elsa. They divorced in the 16th of February 1919, having lived apart for 5 years. And some of his papers that he wrote to her, giving her orders, is awful. Edward had a breakdown about age 20 and was diagnosed with schizophrenia. His mother cared, which is so often the case. If the children require extra care back then, it's very hard to get the parents involved. He committed suicide. He was committed to asylums for several periods, finally being committed permanently after her death. Letters revealed in 2015, Einstein wrote to his early love, Marie Wittner, about his marriage, his strong feeling for her. He wrote in 1910, while his wife was pregnant with her child, and with her second, "I think of you in heartfelt love every spare moment. I'm so unhappy as the only a man can be." He spoke of his misguided love and his mislife regarding his love for Marie. So I'm just a bit confused now. So Marie's the professor's daughter. Okay. Einstein married Elsa Lowenthal in 1919 after having a relationship with her since 1912. She was the first cousin maternally and second cousin paternally. Then immigrated to the United States in 1933. Elsa was diagnosed with heart and kidney problems in 1935 and died in September 36. God, that's an awful years by yourself, mate. But that's always okay. So, this is 48 minutes of Einstein. And, I wish I could fully understand it. But, not necessarily happy in love as you go, but you... Also, to understand German military service, German gymnasiums, and the ability in maths and stuff like that. So some of my kids have outstanding ability, but it's just not picked up by schools. Thanks a lot for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.